This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Human Animal Connection podcast. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph. I'm the executive director and founder of the Human Animal Connection. And today I am delighted to speak to Kim Stoll, and she is the dog training program manager at Soul Dog Lodge. Kim, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. So we're going to talk about the five types of dog enrichment and why they're important, what they are, why are they important, and how you do them at Soul Dog. Well, first of all, before we get into that, just tell me like the one sentence in case people don't know Soul Dog. What do you folks do over there?
Soul Dog Lodge is sort of a multi-service organization. We're known for our dog boarding, dog grooming, and dog training. That's at our new facility over on Tangerine Road. We also have a nonprofit mission to just help keep dogs with their families. And so we do several different things to help keep pets with their families, whether that's emergency boarding for people in different situations where they need to board their dog, or helping people find grant funding to help train their dog so that they can keep it in their home. So stuff like that.
That's wonderful. That's great. Well, we know how important enrichment is, but I think we're going to do kind of a deep dive here so we really understand all the different levels of it. So I know you talk about five different types of enrichment. Let's start with physical because that's the most obvious. Tell us about why physical enrichment, what it is and why it's important.
Yeah, I mean, physical enrichment is, you know, it's sort of obvious, but it's doing different things with their bodies. So that could be having, I mean, some different types of enrichment sort of overlap with each other, but physical enrichment can include stuff like having toys to play with, having stairs to climb, different things in their like kennel enclosure to interact with. You know, it's having pools to splash in and hoses, so things to run around, tunnels to go through, stuff that they can in their environment that they can interact with and be physical with.
Yeah, that's great. So, I mean, one of the, I guess the main concepts is that, you know, all humans, animals, all beings need enrichment. And without it, something like boredom can set in and lethargy can set in and all kinds of negative consequences behaviorally and health-wise if they're not getting a certain amount of enrichment. So, yeah, so physical is the most obvious. What do you mean by occupational enrichment?
So this is giving your dog a job. So, you know, lots of dogs are bred for specific purposes. They have genetic hardwiring to want to perform certain types of behaviors. These could be, you know, your hunting breeds of dogs. These can be your herding breeds of dogs. So it's finding ways for them to have an outlet for those sort of hardwired instincts. And it can be stuff like doing those dog sports, getting your dog involved in agility, doing dock diving for your water breeds. Could be going out and doing sheep herding, doing an instinct test with your herding dog, and just, yeah, those sorts of things that will be fulfilling and also a good partnership with you, because they're, you know, they're learning not just to go crazy running after the sheep, they're learning to follow, you know, the different commands and work with you towards a specific goal. So it can be the dog sports. It can also be, you know, stuff like, you know, if you have a terrier breed who loves to dig, it might be creating a space in your yard, a sandbox for them to dig in. So, yeah, it could be things other than sports as well, as long as it's trying to provide them that outlet.
Yeah, that's really important, I think, for those dogs who maybe have those genetic drives. If they're not getting those drives met, it could result in behaviors that you don't want, right? That, you know, like a herding dog that doesn't have any sheep might start to herd you, right?
Yeah, definitely those things will, you know, pop up in different areas. And I think a lot of people, you know, the reaction is maybe to try to suppress the behavior, but it's going to be a pressure cooker when you have a high drive dog that needs something to do. It's going to pop up. You know, you might suppress it digging in the yard, but it's going to pop up and chewing the couch. You know, it's going to be a game of whack-a-mole if you don't provide the proper stimulation, give them something in partnership with you to go do together.
Yeah. And I think that's a wonderful concept. You mentioned partnership. So it's not just like we're trying to, put them on a ramp or leave them alone. We want to really make this a connected experience between the person and the animal so that they're reading each other's signals and paying attention to each other. Yeah, great.
Yeah, awesome. Definitely. And also, you know, dogs are so, you know, they're kind of made to look to us for direction, and they love having interaction with us. So I think that's a big part of enrichment. It's not just giving your dog a Kong every day and walking away. If your dog gets the same enrichment every day, it kind of ceases to be enriching. So it's varying it up and also being an active participant in some of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Excellent. And what about nutritional enrichment? What do you mean by nutrition? Yeah.
So yeah, that's the food puzzles, the Kongs, the frozen licky mat, the different things that they can be consuming, eating. It could also be scatter feeding them, hiding treats around the house. That kind of overlaps with doing like scent work. But yeah, anything where they're working a little bit harder to get their food than just eating it out of the food bowl.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, coming from, you know, their natural genetics, they didn't have a food bowl down. They had to go get their food. And, you know, we don't provide that for them. So most of us don't have a forest they can go forage in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned the word scatter, just in case people don't know. What is the concept of a scatter pattern with, like, let's say with the treats? What are you doing with scatter and why?
So, I mean, scattering food can even just be like throwing the kibble on your floor or out in the grass where they can, if you have grass, right, they can hunt around to find it. And using their nose, they have to sniff it out. It just takes a little extra brain work. Some people call it feeding the chickens, you know, where you just scatter the food and you let them kind of sniff it out, hunt it down, and also moving food, the food kind of moving across the ground. That's going to be more interesting because it triggers that, you know, visual prey drive instinct to go chase down their food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really important to get their nose involved. You know, if they're in a living with a human, at, you know, in a house or an apartment or wherever they're living, they may be getting the same smells all the time. And we want to make sure that they're getting a variety of smells, because when they're getting novel smells, their brain is like, oh, yay, something new.
Yeah. And dogs totally see the world. Like, it's hard for us to even have the language to describe because we're so visually focused. That's our primary thing as humans. So even when we talk about like how dogs see the world, we're using the phrase see for that. But dogs smell the world. It's hard for us to even have a concept of how a dog thinks about its environment because it is so smell driven and visual is more secondary to smell.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, even if you're into a kind of routine with your dog food, if you have vary the treats and so that they're getting different kinds of smells, this can be just, you know, as simple as that form of enrichment, that they're smelling a new kind of salmon treat or a new kind of bacon treat or whatever it is that they're getting variety, because the more their nose is stimulated, the more they're going to be balanced mentally, I think. Yeah. So that's really great. Okay. And sensory enrichment. What is sensory enrichment?
Yeah. So this is getting the dog's senses involved. So it can be smell games. And like you, so you were mentioned smelling out food. There's also different scent work where you can use essential oils and you can teach your dog to smell, go find the smell of clove. There's different scent kits that you can get online that are like that. So there's also visual, where there's some dogs who will watch TV, put something on, they have dog TV now. If your dog isn't too visually, some dogs get too visually stimulated by that. Other ones find it pleasant.
Yeah.
So like even at Soul Dog in the boarding area, we have some TVs where it plays just like peaceful visuals for the dogs. And yeah, it could also be like we also are always playing like soft music, like classical music for the dogs. That can also just help dampen sort of the fixation on hearing other dogs bark and what was that, and just having that sort of background noise can help calm them down. So yeah, it's just getting their sight, smell, their hearing, all of that involved. It could also be tactile, like walking over different surfaces. This is a big one, especially for, I always talk about it, for socializing your puppy, to walking over different surfaces while they're young, because then when they get older, they're not as fearful of walking over a grate on the street, or grass versus pebbles, or a crinkly surface, having your dog walk over a tarp that crinkles under them. And that can be really strange, but if you make it a positive experience where they're finding food on the crinkly surface, because what we want to do is build confident dog who can experience all these different things in their environment and feel like, okay, I got this. Even if they're a little timid at first, if they can learn to walk over it, then the next time they encounter something that, like that, it's sort of in their Rolodex of like, oh, okay, this is safe and fine and I can keep going.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing that you're doing with the different enrichment things, because what we want to do is help dogs get used to the idea of new equals good rather than new equals scary.
Yeah.
You know, so would you say that temperamentally that some dogs are more interested in new and some dogs are less interested in new things?
Oh, yeah. I think that, I mean, there's a lot of factors that contribute into that. I mean, there is the early puppyhood socialization. If you have a dog who just didn't have many experiences when they were in that critical time, up to 16 weeks old, you know, they're likely going to be more fearful of new things because they just didn't have it during that brain development time. If you are getting your dog from a breeder, getting it from a breeder that you know is helping your dog have positive experiences while they're young, or if you adopt your dog young, getting that started right away. Yeah, there's just their temperament. Some dogs are just naturally like, dun, 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 like more confident going out into the world. Nothing bothers them. Some are going to just be naturally just a bit more reserved and shy. And some of this also will come from just individual temperament and then also breed temperament. So there are dogs that are just naturally going to be more reserved, more watchful, not as boisterous as other breeds, or more like go full steam ahead. I have an Australian cattle dog who's extremely confident, and that is exactly what they're bred to take on bulls. He's going to see something, he's going to be like, I got this, I'm doing it. And then I have a shepherd mix who's way more reserved, watchful. He wants to figure people out before he's going to go walk up to them and say hello. So I think knowing a bit about, you know, even if you have a mixed breed dog, having some ideas of who they are as an individual and how their breed can contribute to that, why they're like that. And it's not anything, you know, my shepherd mix isn't a bad dog because he doesn't love running up to people and saying hi. He's actually really good at his job as a shepherd.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I know a lot of our listeners are, you know, adopting from the shelter. And so they may be getting a dog that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or more. And so let's say it wasn't an ideal puppyhood. What is the ability to, I call them re-puppy a dog, you know, give them experiences that they didn't get. We know that they didn't get them. And what would you say about that? Is it likely that, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always like, you should always try, and your dog might not ever be that. Like, my shepherd's never going to be the super confident, run up to everything full throttle, but he has over the years gotten more and more confident because he's having positive experiences. We're going on hikes, we're meeting different people, and it's all low pressure. Very positive reinforcement for interacting with things. With an older dog, it might be a slower adjustment, and it might be, you don't see a change tomorrow in how fearful they might be over something. But in a year, in 2 years, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, like that situation would have totally freaked him out before, and today he was fine with it. So I think that definitely always giving your dogs new experiences and not just being like, well, my dog's fearful, my dog's reactive, so I'm just going to leave them in the house. That's not an ideal solution. That's really limiting, you know, the box that they have to live in. And so that's why enrichment is important, and finding those safe outlets and finding little windows to, you know, if you have a reactive dog, well, where can you walk them? How can you start building those positive associations with being outside? You know, obviously you don't want to be like, we're going to the 4th Ave Street Fair today, you know, they'll one of our trainers likes to take really reactive dogs to, it's a little bit weird, but to the cemetery, because that's an outdoor space. Or a park might have, you know, parks are sometimes there's a lot of people, there's a lot of dogs, they're unpredictable. A cemetery is a nice outdoor space where you might see a few people, but they're kind of in the distance. You have a lot of space to work with. So finding those opportunities of, you know, where can you take your dog to start building up positive associations with new places?
Yeah, and it's a great concept. I just want to underscore that, the notion of building on positivity. So we don't want to take a scared dog and put them, you know, at a massively scary, triggery kind of situation. We want to give them, oh, just a little taste of something that's new and different or a little scary, have them have a good experience and then build on it. So yeah, that's really, really important point. Good. Well, and last one on the list is social enrichment. Tell us about social enrichment.
This is your play groups, being social with other dogs. It's also being social with you, that interaction, you know, with its person, it can, and playing with you, being with its housemates. If they have housemates that they like to play with, it could also be going to doggy daycare, those sorts of things where they get to be social and interact. And not all dogs love this. Some people have this in their head that their dog needs to have dog friends in order to be happy. But actually, a lot of dogs are perfectly happy just being, you know, with their person. And some dogs, you know, in play groups, they're fine with it, but they're not, you know, especially older dogs, will mill about, will be like, hey, how's it going? But they're not there for a big party. And then there are other dogs that love other dogs. And that's the same with people. You know, I don't love, you know, some people just don't love going to parties and doing a bunch of small talk, meeting a bunch of people. It's exhausting to them. And same for dogs. Some dogs just find it exhausting. And so I would say if your dog doesn't get this play group experience, its life is not missing anything, and that you shouldn't feel like, you know, this dog needs to have dog friends.
Right. And don't force a dog that's not enjoying it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. We're going to take a short little break. When we come back, I want to hear some of the stories about how these wonderful enrichment programs that you're doing at Soul Dog Lodge and Training Center has really helped some of the dogs that you've been working with. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, the Executive Director of the Human-Animal Connection, and I'm speaking with Kim Stahl, and she is the Dog Training Program Manager at Soul Dog Lodge. So I know you interned at Soul Dog. You've got some of your dog training. What drew you into this work, and what was your path of learning?
Yeah, so I think that I always, you know, this is what everyone will say. As a kid, I loved dogs. You know, that was my dream, was I was going to own all these sport dogs and I was going to do agility. I was going to do fly ball and frisbee. I loved watching all these competitions on TV. And then when I was in my 20s, I got my first dog from the Humane Society. And he was not a sport dog. This is my shepherd mix. He is extremely fearful, shut down, would hide, tremble, pee himself if anyone approached him. He was sort of a mess. He was like basically semi-feral. And so my path to helping him and figuring out, okay, well, this is kind of got me interested in not just the sports side of dog training, but the behavioral modification and working with dogs with different sorts of issues. That's how I got interested in that. And I really wanted to help other dogs like Bonus that were in the shelter. So I ended up getting connected with Soul Dog. This was 10 years ago. And I basically just reached out and said, hey, I'm interested in learning about behavior modification and dog training. And can I volunteer or intern with you, or, you know, can I just come shadow? And yeah, Rachel, the founder of Soul Dog, said, you know, she was very generous. She just said, sure, come over, start, you know, working with dogs in their, that were in their board and train. She worked a lot with different rescue groups who had old dogs from the shelter that were having some difficulties in foster homes. And then I ended up helping to run one of the rescue groups that was primarily pulling dogs with different behavioral needs from PAC. So I got even more experience sort of working with not just the fearful dogs, but also the like really reactive dogs, really busy dogs, dogs that needed a job and had kept coming back to the shelter because people just didn't know what to do with these high drive dogs. So that's kind of how I got into it. And then, of course, I kept adopting, getting foster dogs and adopting them with all sorts of different behavioral quirks and just learning to work through them. And yeah, it's always fun. Yeah.
That's great. I know that's the shelter is the best training ground. I mean, that's where you really see the reality on the ground, you know, and see, you know, that's how I learned my method is that if it worked with the shelter dogs, I knew it was going to work. Yeah. Great. So let's hear one of the stories about working with the dogs with your enrichment program. What was the dog's issue going in and how did you work with them and what happened?
Yeah. So we recently had a dog boarding with us, Gracie, who had been with her owner for a while. She's an older dog. The owner went into the hospital, had surgery. She was going to be recovering for a long time. A neighbor was watching Gracie, and then the neighbor had to also travel. So Gracie was with us for several weeks. It was a while to be there. And Gracie was just so shut down. Like, you couldn't even take her on a walk, really. Like, she would just, they call it pancaking, where they just lie flat on the ground. She doesn't want to move. She doesn't want to interact with anything. She doesn't seem to enjoy, you know, she's, you know, just totally sort of, and she's not aggressive in any way, but she's just totally flat.
Yeah.
She doesn't really seem to like being petted. You know, nothing seemed to like really cheer her up. But she's going to be there for weeks. So we're going to keep gently trying, giving her time, giving her space. You know, if that meant, you know, there was times where a staff member would just sit with her outside while she kind of was flattened up against the wall. And it's like, okay, we're just going to sit here today, Gracie. I guess that's what we're doing. And so our staff just kept being really gentle and persistent with, trying her in different scenarios. So we have this big enrichment room where the boarding dogs have play group. It also has like a couch to just like for dogs that just want to hang out. And by just putting Gracie in that situation of being in the enrichment room while other calm, we paired it up with like calm play group. She's in the room with other dogs. She can see them interacting, but she has an out. Like, so she can like go get behind the barrier. She can go into a crate there. She doesn't have to interact if she doesn't want to. So giving your dog, your shy dog, like that out, if they don't want to be involved, but she could watch from afar.
Right.
She can see that the other dogs are like not a threat. So just doing this a few times, eventually she started actually acting like a dog, you know, going out with the other dogs, wagging her tail, following them around, getting more and more interested in that social interaction with the other dogs and having that outlet. I think her learning, oh, it's safe here. These other dogs are safe. I'm safe. Then she started getting more social with people too. And the other part of this is that Gracie she was a longer hair dog and she hadn't been groomed in quite a while. So our staff were very careful trying to give her little bits of like grooming to get the mats out, just in like really small sections. So we're not trying to give her a bath and a brush and all that scary kind of experience, but it's just getting those mats out. We discovered one, like some of her nails were so, had gotten so long that they were like curling. So we got her like nails clipped. And I think that also helped a lot, is that she was grooming can call it like grooming issues, like matting, like nails that are curling. This can cause a dog pain, which can cause them to then shut down and not want to interact with anything because they have this chronic discomfort. So I think getting her that little bit of grooming, getting her into those play groups, just the staff being really consistent and gentle and give it like, you know, we bring her into the office area and just have her sit under the desk while we went about office work, stuff like that. Yeah, it was just amazing to see that sort of over the course of maybe 2 weeks, the transformation between like, you know, pictures of her totally flattened against a wall to running around in playgroup following other dogs and just seeming like a regular happy dog.
That's wonderful. I mean, so many elements there that were really working right. What, letting her take her time, you know, letting her observe so that she could just get used to things at her own pace, and the choice, the ability to choose to opt in, opt out, go and go behind a barrier or go over here or stay farther away until she was ready to make the choice to come into the group. And I think that is something, you know, people are fostering or rescuing dogs in those situations, you know, to kind of remember that formula, to let the dog take their time. And if they can observe the thing that you're introducing them to before they have to actually do anything, you know, so they can just be learning by watching. So that all that time that may look like she was doing nothing watching those other dogs, she was maybe learning something about social communication, you know, like, oh, that's what they do. They do this or they do that or they, you know.
Yes. Yeah. And I also, I think that there's also value in sometimes a dog watching a human do something first. So if you want them to go over the jump, if they're kind of fearful, like, okay, you take a step over the jump first and you show them, hey, this is how you do it and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, it sounds like wonderful work that you're doing over at Soul Dog. Thank you so much for the good work that you're doing and that Soul Dog is doing, and helping dogs to stay with their person, you know, even if they're going through different things, surgery or whatever it is, and just helping dogs that may have had not such a good beginning in a shelter life. The idea that we don't have to just accept that this is the way it's going to be forever, that it is possible for many of these dogs to make changes. They may not make the kinds of changes that some other dog might make. You know, we do have to accept their basic temperament and need, but we don't have to just simply accept the behavior as is presented. There are oftentimes many things that we can do that will allow a dog to have a fuller life, and to have both the human and the dog to also together have a fuller life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely I want to encourage people to find ways to do enrichment in your own home. It's not just something that, you know, you send your dog off to boarding and they'll get enrichment there. Enrichment should be something that your dog is getting every day. And that, I mean, it's everything that you do with your dog. It's walks. Enrichment can even just be like putting something new in the living room with them, a new object to interact with. You know, it can be, you don't have to go out and buy the expensive puzzle feeders. You can just use some packing paper in a Tupperware and scatter some food in there, or using toilet rolls and crumpling them up and letting the dog tear them up to get food inside. You don't have to spend a bunch of money to give your dog novel experiences with you. Yeah.
Great. Well, this is very inspiring. So I hope everybody listening will think about the different ways that they can do enrichment in whatever way they can, and so that it's part of everyday life. That's great. Well, thank you, Kim. It's been delightful to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we'll see you on the next episode of the Human Animal Connection. I'm Jeannie Joseph, your host, and we'll say aloha for now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.